Pull up a chair. It's a raw March morning in 1964, and there's a little single-engine airplane sitting on the ramp at Port Columbus, Ohio. Ice in the puddles, wind out of the northwest. A Cessna 180 tail dragger, the color of vanilla ice cream with a stripe down the side, and climbing up into the left seat alone is a 38-year-old mother of three who most of the neighbors would have told you was a housewife. Her name was Geraldine Mock. Everybody called her Jerry. And by the time that little airplane came home, she'd done something nobody, man or woman, had ever quite done the way she did it. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar. Here on Radio Hangar, where we keep the old stories flying. Today we're going to talk about the flight that everybody should know and hardly anybody does. Before we get rolling, a quick word about the folks who help keep the lights on around here. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friends, if there was ever a pilot whose story deserved a coin, it's the one we're telling today. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. Now let me set the table for you. By the early 1960s, flying around the world wasn't new anymore. Wiley Post had done it. The Army had done it back in 1924 with the World Cruisers. Airlines were carrying folks across oceans in pressurized comfort with a hot meal and a pillow. So circling the globe in and of itself was old news. But here's the thing that nobody had checked off the list. No woman had ever flown solo all the way around the world, not once. And the name that hung over that empty spot in the record books was a name every one of you knows, Amelia Earhart. Because Amelia had gone out to try exactly that in 1937, and she and the Electra and Fred Noonan had vanished into the Pacific somewhere near Howland Island, and the ocean never gave them back. So for 27 years, that record just sat there, waiting, like it was cursed. Now here's where it gets interesting. Jerry Mock was not some barnstormer. She wasn't a movie star with a sponsor and a publicity machine. She was an aeronautical engineering student, one of the few women in her class at Ohio State back in the day. And then she got married and she raised kids, and she and her husband Russ ran a little airport and a flying business outside Columbus. She'd gotten her pilot certificate, she flew for fun, and the way the story goes, one evening she was sitting at home, and she said to Russ that she was bored. Bored with the same short hops around Ohio. And Russ, half-joking the way husbands do, said something like, "Well, why don't you just fly around the world?" She looked at him, and she said, "All right, that's it. That's the origin story. A bored afternoon and a dare that got taken seriously." The airplane was a 1953 Cessna 180. If you don't know the type, let me paint it for you. It's a high-wing, four-seat, single-engine tail dragger, 230 horsepower up front. Honest airplane, working airplane. The kind of ship a bush pilot in Alaska loves because it'll haul a load off a gravel bar and bring it home. It was not exotic, it was not fast, it was the sort of airplane sitting on half the ramps in America right now. Her particular one wore the registration November 1538 Charlie, and she named it the Spirit of Columbus, though she mostly just called it Charlie. Now they modified it for the trip, of course. They pulled the back seats and packed an extra fuel tank so she could stretch those overwater legs, long-range radios, extra navigation gear. By the time they were done, that little Cessna had something like three times its normal fuel capacity crammed into the cabin. And Jerry flew the whole way sitting practically on top of a bomb's worth of avgas. She had autopilot trouble, radio trouble, and she was flying by dead reckoning and radio navigation over some of the loneliest water on Earth, in a single-engine airplane, by herself, with no GPS, no moving map, none of the magic we take for granted today, just a compass, a chart, a clock, and her own two hands. Now, let me tell you about the race. Because there was a race, whether anybody wanted to admit it or not, at almost the exact same time Jerry was getting ready. Another American woman named Joan Merriam Smith was setting out to do the same thing, fly solo around the world. And Joan was flying a twin-engine Piper Apache and on purpose following Amelia Earhart's original route as a tribute. Two women, same dream, same empty spot in the record book, leaving within a couple of days of each other in the spring of 1964. The press ate it up, called it the air race. Two housewives, they said, because that's how the papers talked back then, racing around the world. Jerry hated that framing. She wasn't racing Joan, she was chasing the record. And the record didn't care who came second, but make no mistake, the pressure was real and the whole country was watching two little airplanes crawl across the map. She took off from Columbus on March 19, 1964, and turned east. Now let me tell you what it was actually like, because this is the part the record book leaves out. She flew the North Atlantic first. Bermuda, the Azores, then across to Casablanca. And right out of the gate over the ocean, her long-range radio started acting up and her autopilot quit. So there she is, hand-flying a fuel-heavy tail dragger through weather over the Atlantic at night, trying to raise somebody on a radio that won't cooperate, alone. Imagine the noise, that 230-horse engine droning away 6 inches in front of you for 8, 10, 12 hours at a stretch. The smell of avigas and hot oil and old airplane, your whole world shrunk down to the glow of the instrument lights and the black outside the windscreen. Then it got worse, coming into North Africa. She got a little off course and she ended up over a stretch of Egyptian desert, low on daylight and unsure of her position, and she picked out a runway and set that Cessna down, glad to be on the ground. Turned out she'd landed at a secret military airbase. The soldiers came out, rifles and all, wanting to know who on God's green earth this American woman in the little white airplane was, and what she thought she was doing on their classified installation. She talked her way through it, charm, paperwork, and a whole lot of nerve, and they let her go. But friends, that'll get the heart going. There was a fire scare too. On one landing, she smelled something burning, and it turned out to be a brake dragging and heating up. A brake fire on a fuel-laden airplane, a long, long way from home. She got it handled. She kept going. She flew across the Middle East, across the great emptiness, Cairo, Dharan, Karachi, Calcutta, then down through Southeast Asia and out over the Pacific. Bangkok, Manila, Guam, Wake Island. And then the big one, the leg that had swallowed Amelia, the long lonely reach across the open Pacific. Think about that for a second. A single engine airplane, one engine. If that Continental up front so much as hiccuped over that water, there was no second engine to carry her, no place to go, nobody within 1,000 miles. Just her and the airplane. And the discipline to trust her navigation and hold her heading hour after hour after hour, when every instinct is screaming at you to doubt. That's not housewife stuff. That's airmanship of the highest order. She hit weather. She hit fatigue. The bone-deep kind, where you've been strapped into a vibrating aluminum box for half a day, and you still have half a day to go. She fought mechanical gremlins the whole way. But that Cessna kept running, and Jerry kept flying. And one leg at a time, the map started to run out of ocean. Wake Island, then Honolulu, and then the last big jump, back across the Pacific, to the coast of California. She crossed the American shoreline, and she still had a continent to go, but now she was over home dirt, and you have to figure something eased up in her chest, right about then. And on April 17, 1964, 29 days after she'd left, the Spirit of Columbus came back down out of the Ohio sky and touched down at Port Columbus, right where she'd started. Roughly 23,000 miles, 21 or 22 stops, depending on how you count them, 29 days. And a record that had sat empty and cursed for 27 years finally filled. Jerry Mock became the first woman to fly solo around the world. And I want to be precise about what she actually earned, because it's more than that one headline. The Fédération Aéronautique Internationale, the FAI, the body that certifies these things officially, credited her not just with the first solo circumnavigation by a woman, but with a whole stack of speed and distance records for that class of aircraft. She didn't just finish, she set marks. She beat Joan Merriam Smith home, too, by a few weeks. And I'll tell you, there's a bittersweet note there, because Joan finished her own flight not long after, a genuine achievement in its own right, and then died in an airplane crash just a year or two later. Two brave women, one dream, and the sky gives and the sky takes. Now here's what always gets me about this story. Jerry Mock did the thing everybody expects to be done with rockets and jets and government money and a support team of hundreds, and she did it in an airplane you could go buy today. A used single-engine Cessna, the most ordinary airplane in the world, she proved that the barrier was never really the machine. The barrier was whether somebody had the guts to point an ordinary airplane at the whole planet and just go. President Johnson gave her the Federal Aviation Administration's gold medal for that flight. The FAA's highest honor, handed to a woman from Columbus who, a few years before, had been flying hamburger runs around Ohio and getting bored. And then, and this is the part that stings a little, she more or less faded from the public eye. She wrote a book about the trip called 3A Charlie, after the airplane. But she never became a household name the way Amelia did. Maybe because she came home. Maybe because a mystery sells better than a success. Maybe because in 1964, the country was already looking up past the airplanes, toward the Mercury and Gemini boys, and the race to the moon, and a lady in a Cessna just didn't fit the headline anymore. But the airplane got its due. The Spirit of Columbus, that little vanilla-colored 180, hung for years in a shopping mall-turned-museum, and eventually went where it belonged. Today, 3A Charlie hangs in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, out at the Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center near Dulles. Next time you're out there and you're wandering past the Big Iron, the SR-71 and the Space Shuttle and all the heavy hardware, look up. Find the little high-wing Cessna, the plain one, and you tell whoever you're with the story you heard today, because that ordinary little airplane flew all the way around the world with one woman and one engine and a whole lot of grit. Jerry Mock passed away in 2014 at 88 years old, down in Florida. 50 years, almost to the season, after she made that flight. And I'd like to think she spent those years knowing exactly what she'd done, even if the rest of the world took its sweet time catching on. The details I've shared today come from Jerry's own account in her book 3A Charlie, from the record files of the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale, and from the good folks at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, who keep her airplanes safe for the rest of us. If you want to see photographs of the Spirit of Columbus and read more, you can always start over at radiohangar.com. So here's my thought as we button up the hangar tonight. The next time somebody tells you your airplane's too small, or too slow, or too ordinary to do anything remarkable, you think about a bored housewife in Columbus, Ohio, who looked at a used Cessna and saw the whole world. Blue skies, and keep the greasy side down. I'll see you next time.